The Gulf Injustice Podcast, the official podcast of Detained in Dubai with Radha Sterling.
Welcome to the Gulf Injustice Podcast. I'm Radha Sterling, and today we're talking to Wolfgang Douglas. It's a continuation of Albert Douglas's detention, which has been going on since January last year. Now, a clemency request has been put in by the British government, and we're hoping for positive news come April. But for the moment, let's speak to Wolfgang. Hi, Wolfgang. Thanks again for coming on the show, and it's good to see you. And I understand you're in a hotel at the moment, so if there's a little bit of background noise, please, everyone, bear with us. We're looking for an update, essentially, on what's been happening with Albert. We know that he's been through quite a lot of very stressful and emotional situations over the past month or so. And we're hoping that he's close, very close, to receiving a clemency and being able to come home. The British government has already submitted this clemency request, I understand. So if you could just let us know, how's Albert doing, for one? You speak to him on a regular basis. And what has he been through over the past few weeks? And how does he feel now? Is he confident that he's going to get this clemency through?
Well, Radha, again, most of it's thank you to you, but the FCDO have finally made a official clemency pardon request, and that, as I understand, will be considered for the 2nd of April. Mm-hmm. It's been a year of lobbying and, you know, a lot of work to get this point, very much, Radha, through to your pushing. The FCDO do not help everybody. It's quite sad. But they have decided to support my father's case. He's an innocent man. He's been beaten and tortured, and it goes against all of human rights that Great Britain are supposed to stand for. That went in on the 22nd of February, officially, under the signature of Mr. Patrick Moody and under the agreement of Miss Liz Truss, as I understand. So, you know, I'm very, very grateful. The case officer, the Foreign Commonwealth Office in the Emirates has worked diligently to actually make this happen, because I have not had success with the FCDO naturally. It has been genuinely a mountain of epic proportions. I cannot even begin to tell people who haven't been along the journey with me and you, Radha, just how shallow the Foreign Commonwealth is. It's money over lives every day. So we're very grateful that we've been finally accepted to be pushed, and we're just hoping and praying that on the 2nd of April, Sheikh's going to read the cover letter from the UK government and decide on this occasion that genuinely this is the case to be released. He's had several medical panels, hearings, who've all confirmed his beatings and torture, broken bones and head trauma, and even the early signs of Alzheimer's, which is quite common in head trauma. Being treated for PTSD at the moment. We're just hoping that they don't send him to a psych ward, because that's sometimes what they do to punish you.
Yes.
They did threaten to do that last week. It's a method of punishment. It's also a method of silence.
Yes.
Because once you've become in those psych wards, they can just drug you. This is just such a delicate time, and my biggest fear at the moment, Radha, is all of what's happening in Ukraine. It's a travesty, but it shouldn't blanket out what is happening everywhere else in the world at the same time.
That's absolutely right. We can't have a single issue when we have issues all over the world. And that's why we have different departments and different people with different positions and roles and responsibilities. That's why we have an ambassador to the UAE. And I imagine at this point, part of his role is going to be lobbying the UAE to support their sanctions and various other Ukraine-Russia related issues. And I hope that that is not going to cause him to be neglectful of the British citizens who need their help in the UAE.
Well, Patrick Moody was recently speaking on the television about his help and support for the Ukrainians, which I myself have donated to the cause, and my family have donated a large amount to the cause, and we really feel strongly that it's just horrific what's happening. But Patrick Moody is the ambassador to the Middle East, North Africa.
Yes.
He has actual problems on his hands, like Albert Douglas, my father, subject to beatings and torture and human rights violations. I mean, his partners in aid are committing atrocities on human rights on a daily basis. So to listen to him talk about things that's happening in Ukraine, it's really not what he's there to do.
That's absolutely right, and a little bit hypocritical when you see the effort that it's taken us to lobby for Albert Douglas and to lobby for a man who has been beaten and tortured by our supposed ally, for him to deviate and focus on something else. I mean, it's very hypocritical that it's taken this long, and suddenly he's able to make a public statement about something that's not even in his remit, and yet he's made no public statement at all about Albert. And of course, Liz Truss and various other MPs have been supporting Albert, but not publicly. And it would actually be nice to see them speaking up publicly rather than relying on other people whose responsibility and role it isn't, like, for example, Baroness Whittaker and all of the other MPs, Andy Slaughter and several others who have been very supportive of Albert, are the ones speaking up, even though the people whose role and responsibility it is have been completely silent in a public sense. So it would be nice to see someone like Ambassador Moody publicly making these statements when it has been confirmed by the UAE's own medical team that Albert was actually tortured and beaten. It wasn't made up. It's factual. It's proven. It's true. And we want to see, I mean, firstly, we want to see Albert's home. That's the main thing here. And now that we've got to this point where the torture and the beatings have been wholly proven, the fact that he didn't write the check that is the reason for his arrest and detention has now been proven. So it seems ludicrous to me that we still have to go through the official process of requesting a pardon, hoping for a pardon. And then we no doubt have Albert at the other end as well. I mean, he might be worried that it's just not going to go through and he could be there for years more. How is he holding up?
He's in a position at the moment where he doesn't know what the next step is. I mean, the FCDO have gone very silent at the moment, and there's no news coming what's the next step other than the 2nd of April. We just have to wait and see. And I know that the Foreign Commonwealth Officer in the Emirates has made a huge effort to make sure that this pardon request of release has been submitted in full. He's now done several hearings from human rights teams that have confirmed, and he's the first of his case where he's actually made a case against the police officers that beat him. Never before has a British citizen made case against Alain prison officers. This is the first. Mm. The UAE has set up a board for human rights recently.
It seems almost just in response to Albert's case, because his is the first that I've known of anyway, where any member of some, you know, internal human rights group has actually been present. So that's quite interesting. What do you make of that? No one else in the prison, you told me, had heard of them before.
No other torture victim has been interviewed by the human rights team. They call it the Institute of Human Rights. Mm-hmm. it's a new body. Nobody's really heard of them within the prisons. I mean, the Elaine prison is a torture prison, so I can't quite grasp what the Human Rights Institute would do when they actually have torture prisons in the Emirates. I mean, what do? Avoid the place? You know, they certainly couldn't go to these prisons, could they? It's all very hypocritical. A lot of propaganda. I mean, in the UAE, you've got no free press, you've got no free speech, you've got no free expression. You're jailed for running down the government. You know, people are mandatorily I think the word is arbitrarily held well past their deadlines. My father's surrounded by people that have had small cases and, you know, 15 years later, they're still there. And it's in the UK media news. It's actually available. The economic trap in the UAE, it's a system to itself. So when I hear about, we've had the human rights officer, the human rights team come in and interview your father, this means nothing. They have no human rights. You know, they have the beating rooms. They do torture their prisoners. My father had to wait 9 months for the bone protruding out of his arm.
It's incredible.
I mean, where was the human rights officers? And going back to Patrick Moody, this is within his remit. These are real cases for British citizens.
Yes.
Actually, his job. When was the last time I heard him, on television making a public remark? It's been proven that he's been beaten. He's made a case against the first time in history that a British citizen's made a case against Elaine officers. One day they actually try to send him back to Elaine, even though we had strict assurances that if we were to testify and give very detailed information of what happened, that would never happen. And thanks to the SCDO officers and the MP, Miss Felicity Buchan, a swift intervention, we were able to, halfway through the hearing, get it stopped, halted, and brought back to Dubai, because in Dubai, you start with talking, then it's the threats, and then it's the violence. So, they very may have saved his life. I mean, this country, the UAE, the political ally of the UK, it's a joke. And every day they hold him there. Now we're talking about the concept of him being sent to a psychiatric ward. 60-year-old grandfather, he's forgetting his words. We think it's because of his beating to the head. Do you remember he suffered bleeding from the beating afterwards in the brain? His hands are still not fixed. They're still broken. He's only had one of several operations on his shoulder. 7 months, they didn't give him his heart medication. I mean, this place is a mess. This is a mess. I just can't believe that, you're not seeing, I'm watching Patrick Moody talk about Ukrainians and I'm waiting for him to talk about the people he's supposed to represent. When was the last time you saw him talking about this? I am very, very, very thankful to every person within the FCDO and the UK government that is helping. But my God, money before people, this is something extraordinary. When this is over, this should be recorded. This is something else. I've learned so much by mixing with these members of parliaments and these people within our UK government of just what a British life means. And now we're waiting on the 2nd of April. If he's not pardoned and he's not released back to the United Kingdom, We don't know. They might send him to a psych ward and drug him for the rest of his life. I mean, they actually did do that to his other daughter. Sheikh did that to his own family. And Radha, you supported that case.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw Sheikha Latifa herself give direct testimony that she and her sister had been locked up and forcibly drugged for years. It wouldn't be the first time that someone has complained about, you know, this very situation. And that's the last place that he wants to be.
If he can do that to his daughter, you know, who are we? I mean, the British government, we are the largest trading partner of the United Arab Emirates. We have created that country and supported them. You know, this situation, my father falls into the category of quite a lot of other British people that have been beaten. We talk about Lee Bradley Brown that was killed on the 2nd of April. If he doesn't come home, who knows if he'll ever come home? It could be that he never comes home, and the travesty can actually get worse. This is unbelievable. This is an unbelievable set of circumstances, and to think that such evil could go unchecked, and our government would be so quick to appease. We talked about Boris Johnson running around to Saudi Arabia to get him to buy Chelsea Football Club. I'm a big Chelsea fan, and my father's a big Chelsea fan. You know, take it off one man who has done business with a dictator to quickly get a dictator to own it.
Yes.
You know, these countries in the Gulf where they kill gays. My father, on his record to your podcast, explained how they beat people for being black and torture them and hang them upside down naked. And this is barbaric. And to think that our government is appeasing it, and people like my father and others like Billy Hood and Mr. Cornelius, how is it, how have we got here? On the 2nd of April, we are praying. I go to my church, we all pray that there's going to be some clemency given in this extreme case. And Radha, I'll be honest with you, if it wasn't for Detained in Dubai, just like Ryan Cornelius, my father would be there for 14 years unheard of.
Absolutely, it would just be forgotten about. I mean, what I'm hoping is we have seen some different.
They'd get away with what they're doing. You know, they'd be getting away with it. This podcast is getting people the opportunity to see not the propaganda. You know, I mean, I know that you get death threats. I know that you are being threatened and being abused with this. You know, this is something else. And to be honest with you, on the 2nd of April, I spoke to prisoners abroad just recently. And when we were pleading with them not to send them to a psychiatric ward, and this is a man that's just a little old man, he has nothing wrong with him to be sent to a psychiatric ward. It's a way of silencing. This is literally a call for his life. If he doesn't get out on the 2nd of April, they have a free rein to do anything they want. And that is scary and disturbing. And the other day when they sent him to Al-Ain, he was in fear of his life, Radha. Did you hear that? You heard the recording? And I think it's on your website.
Absolutely. I mean, he was saying his last goodbyes to his family. He was saying, he basically thought he was being sent back to the same prison where he was tortured and where they threatened to harm him in the event that he spoke about how he was beaten and tortured. So of course he thought that was it, that's final. He is out of this life and there's nothing that can be done about it. And they would be able to do it in plain sight with the British government watching, and there would be no consequences. So that was his fear. It's It's actually incredible that the British government stepped in on that one. Luckily, Albert had the opportunity to tell you what was happening, and we could pressure the British government severely to put a stop to this transfer back to Alain. And luckily, they did intervene, and they did actually send a member of the Dubai government to go and retrieve Albert. And in what was a very dramatic 24 hours, wasn't it? I mean, you were completely distressed and extremely concerned. I remember you were very emotional at that point. What I'm hoping is, you know, like, we look at what's happened over the past year with Albert, and it started off, you know, it was such an effort for us to really lobby for him and to get the British government on board to help him. And when they finally agreed to do it, we have seen some changes that we haven't seen in other cases in the past. So hopefully Albert is going to become perhaps an example of what Dubai should do in the future. Now, if he's given his clemency on the 2nd of April, and if he's exonerated of the charges against him and allowed to return home, and if as a result of his case we see perhaps this new human rights department, and perhaps, you know, the pressure that came from Liz Truss and Ambassador Moody might lead to some positive changes there, I definitely won't hold my breath, but perhaps this could be the catalyst essentially for Dubai improving. Because as you said, when they've been getting away with this for a long, long time, and the British government has kind of finally thrown their weight around a little bit in Albert's case, I'm still not convinced, because
they certainly haven't done it naturally, though.
No, it's required a lot of force. But
the British government haven't done it naturally. I mean, a lot of people watching our podcast as we talk, they don't read the thousands of emails. The hundreds of correspondence.
Thousands of emails. And I've read your, you know, pile of emails and phone calls, and you've had meetings, and you've had to lobby not just the FCDO, but a lot of other departments and the MP on a constant and consistent basis, with people ignoring your communications. And I mean, it's been practically a full-time job for you.
It actually is a full-time job. It's as I said, the day that I started this is a job for life. Because literally, they have killed British citizens. They, if they get away with it, they will continue to do so. Mm. And, you know, if our government's going to support that, that's shocking to me. I think that the UAE wants to be an open society on paper, you know, in front of the television screen.
Right.
They talk a good story, but behind closed doors, your podcast is allowing people to see a very much a reality, not just for my case, my father's case, but for just an avalanche of hypocritical human rights violations, starting from Labour through to financial cases, you know, forced confessions, these human rights officers that have been newly appointed to this new position, this is a chance for them, you know, to say that they actually have some form of merit. This is an opportunity for them to say, yeah, on this occasion, we saw an old man who was innocent being beaten and tortured. He shouldn't be here. This is wrong. He's been unfairly tricked. He's going to have lifelong disabilities. He now, we've asked for a wheelchair. He hasn't got one. He's got a broken plastic chair. He's under 24-hour lighting. He doesn't have lights off. You know, they would like to send him to a psychiatric ward if we don't get our government to stop them, so they could drug him. We are, you know, we're at the cusp of his life. So, you know, I just don't know if there's anything else we can do. I mean, I just wish that I had this on television and on the radio and on newspapers more. His life is on the line with something that is a basic human right anywhere in the world.
I mean, to me, introducing this human rights department and putting him in front of the medical board and everything. Okay, they've done that. They've interviewed him ad nauseum. They've gone through everything that happened to him. They have the cases.
And they've accepted.
Exactly. They've accepted it. They've got his legal cases. They've accepted that. They can review that. So the fact that he's still in prison doesn't make me feel very confident that actually anything has changed. I feel that it's mostly a show for the British government, and the British government needs to ensure that it's not just a show, an appeasement that's going to go on for months and years. I mean, the fact that they've got to this point, the British government should be saying, OK, you've got to this point now, push it through. They shouldn't have to wait, you know, weeks or months. I mean, when you come to realise the situation, it should just be an instant decision and instant action.
I believe that they've genuinely considered this case because of its high profile nature. The fact it's been across every media outlet in the United Kingdom. It's also been internationally recognised by papers in France, Spain,
and it's been
Portugal.
Discussed at Parliament as well.
You know, it's been held as a discussion in Parliament. You know, it's made news. You know, in every high standing position it can make news, and that's why it was considered for pardon. And if they have a human rights institute that they've instated, then they have to do their job. And let's see if they do it, because I don't believe it. I don't believe they have a human rights institute. I think it's just a pretend sham office. And I highly doubt that they have human rights on their mind. But
it seems
see
like a tick a box endeavour, and much like other provisions they've brought in, like the bankruptcy laws that were completely ineffective, and the Ministry of Happiness, and people had high hopes that they would be able to intervene in these kind of cases as well. So, and that went nowhere. So let's hope that this is not just a charade, another publicity stunt coming from the Dubai government, and hopefully this could potentially be a shift.
I always say this to people. People always say, he's in prison, he must be a criminal. Rather, if you were in Dubai, you would be serving life in jail.
Yes.
If not the death penalty. You would be a criminal, because human rights activists is a crime in the UAE. You know, to even sit and protect a dog is a crime in the UAE. To run down the government and talk about blatant human rights violations is a crime in the UAE. Ahmed Mansour, the human rights activist, has been there. You know, I mean, if you go on that Twitter and just look at human rights in Dubai, it blow your mind. Our government should be, instead of, and with all due respect to the Ukrainians, because what they're going through, it breaks everyone's hearts. It's a sick and evil thing that's happening to them. But our government should be putting our government, our people first. And our people are suffering in duress. And to be in prison, being tortured, being beaten, being forced into confessions, being tasered or electrocuted, or having parts of their bodies burned off with blow torches. Mm-hmm. If our government can actually look and call them a government, there's something wrong with our government.
Yes.
Not something wrong with theirs.
Yes.
They don't have a government. We're going to see on the 2nd of April, which is their Ramadan, their holy time, to see if they can honestly say that Albert deserves more punishment. Mm-hmm. We don't think he's committed a crime. As I said, a criminal is a very loose word. You would be one of the worst criminals in Dubai, rather, for being a human rights activist.
Yeah.
The word criminal, he has suffered more and endured more. He is a 60-year-old grandfather that has endured what athletes couldn't take. He never signed false confessions. He has been a stiff upper lip British gentleman all the way. He has taken the abuse, violent abuse, mistreatment. He survived. He had to drink out toilets to survive. That man is more man than any of the people that I listen to, and his voice without you would have gone unheard. And this podcast gives an opportunity for people that are going to invest in Dubai to say, oh my God, am I going to put my money in a place that at any moment in time can be just taken from me? I can lose my investment, lose my liberties, lose my life. Someone can accuse me and I can be thrown in prison, you know, where women are raped and can't report rape. Or, you know, do I want to be in set of circumstances where propaganda fills the void in such a manner that there are no freedom of speech, no freedom of expression? You're not allowed. The Ministry of Happiness is there to police people talking about the government, and they call the Ministry of Happiness. This is a sick place. And what they've done to Albert Douglas is sick and it's sad. And I really genuinely, on a humanitarian level, surely feel that someone would say enough is enough. Our foreign Commonwealth office has finally made the effort to do what they should have done a year ago. But if they don't succeed and he doesn't get this pardon or this clemency, we have no idea of what they're capable of doing next. Well, we have a very good idea of what they're capable of, but we have no idea what they'll do next.
What they might do next.
His life is literally on the line. And I can only, but anyone that's watching this, to get people to go to that website, albertdouglas.com or Detained in Dubai, and find any way at all that they can help us get the exposure and awareness that this case deserves. You know, the Ukrainians deserve our heartfelt help, and I personally have helped, despite what's happening with my own family. But what's happening to our own people, and all we can do is take Instagram photographs at the Burj Khalifa. This is sad. This is sad. This
and
is a very sad.
People who look into this case, and I've circulated it obviously with a lot of people, and I do get feedback, and the ones who have seen it and they've seen that he didn't commit a crime, that he, you know, was forced to confess or attempted confessions.
He never confessed.
No, he never confessed. They did attempt to force
despite
him.
What they did. Yeah, they tried hard.
They tried. And in other cases, they have been successful in that endeavour. So when people look at this issue and they realise, okay, it's not just Albert, and then they start looking at other issues as well, and they, you know, the word does spread. They tell everyone they know, don't go to the UAE. You could end up like this. You could end up beaten, tortured. Look at Lee Bradley Brown. And of course, Arta Legesca, who was a cellmate for Ahmed Mansour, and he complained about his torture, rape. He's deceased now, and we have Lee Bradley Brown's inquest coming up in October now. It's been postponed. And I mean, this is just, it's not an isolated incident, is it? Everyone is at risk. And this needs to be spoken about more.
She needs travel advice given.
Yes.
There has to be travel advice given. If we are going to continue going there as a country, you should be warned. When you enter that country, should for whatever reason somebody was to even as much as accuse you, you could end up winding up spending the rest of your life in prison, or possibly beaten, tortured, forced to confess the crimes that you may or may not have committed.
Yeah.
And you are not an equal party under the law in a country where they have a pyramid system. So that's Emiratis at the very, very top, the Gulf nationals below that, white Western Europeans below that, Middle Eastern parties and other white people, Asian minorities, and then at the very, very bottom, the black people. And I am not a racist. That country is the most racist. It's the most racist pyramid system I've ever heard of. People should be aware that, you know, to as much as be gay, you can be killed. You can have the death penalty. You can spend life in jail. At the very least 10 years. You can't talk about any form of rights or freedom of speech. And should you do that, you will get 1, 10, life in jail, even the death penalty.
And here we are again we're criticizing Russia for having this, you know, propagandist, you know, censorship of Western media. Look at the UAE. I mean, they're one of the most censored countries in the world. Journalists don't feel free to talk about any issues going on in the country. They can be jailed if you talk about human rights, if you talk about political change or anything that might upset the government's vision and for the country, you're going to end up in prison. And yet we complain about other countries like China and Russia who do exactly the same thing.
Well, you use the word debt. A country that imprisons you for debt. My father has a 3 million pounds fine. And they call it what's called a debtor's jail. You get £20 a day for, I don't know how many hundreds of years that will be.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people go, oh, he's only got 2 years. Yes, 2 years.
Plus, well, I mean, we just had Steve Long, the army man. I don't know whether you saw this case, but we had Steve Long arrested in January for saying that he feared there was a bomb on a plane. Now, he's having a mental breakdown, but he was convicted and he was sentenced to a fine of £104,000, which ultimately, if we can't pay it, equates to 13 and a half years in prison. And that's for just £100,000. So, I mean, yours, you know, gosh.
3 million.
Exactly. That's a life in prison for anyone of any age.
What they do is while you're in the prison, your mortgages collapse, your businesses fail, your staff don't get paid. So you end up with an avalanche.
It all compiles, yeah.
They compile. And my father's surrounded by people that, like Ryan Cornelius, that are spending life in jail. Life in jail. You know, yeah. And Dubai, of all people, to punish debt, which is mostly caused by themselves. The state calls most debt. Mm. It's financial entrapment a lot of the time.
Yes.
My father's case, you know, he was innocent of his original charges, and the amount of charges he has against him today, you know, because he was in prison. He's a criminal because he didn't pay his house mortgage or his apartment mortgage. He had a lot of property. They foreclosed on him. You know, he's not a criminal. He's a victim of circumstances in a country that criminalizes debt. Dubai itself fails to pay its debt every single day of the week. Why is Sheikh Mohammed not putting himself in prison or beating himself?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just hilarious in a sense, isn't it? It's amazing how many contracts and suppliers the Dubai government and their corporations defaulted on in the past 10 years that then caused them to default on their suppliers. They created the chain, and the people in the Dubai government don't go to jail for this. Everyone else
They're the benefiter,
yeah,
and the jailkeeper.
Yes.
They're throwing people in jail and directly benefiting from the back of putting people in jail.
Yes.
And the more people go in jail, the more they benefit. And, you know, there are so many questions. What about all of the stock that was taken from my father? What about all the money that was taken from him? You know, at the moment, we will settle just to get his life back. We would walk naked in the street to see my father
free,
you know, survive this injustice, this travesty of justice, this evil, inhumane reality. But this country actually earns money out of defaulting.
Yes.
And they're the biggest defaulting state, I would say, in the modern world. And I just think that this if there's not travel advice, if business people are not advised before they buy homes, properties, and investments. We recently did a demonstration or a gathering at a property exhibition where we really made sure that before you sign on the dotted line. Before you sign on the dotted line, you know that you're signing your life away. This is something that at any time the wool can be pulled under your feet and you can lose your life. And my father is an example of just what a dictatorship has the ability to do. And the fact that our government have tiptoed and pussyfooted around it, it's just unbelievable, shocking. And to watch Patrick Moody talk about Ukrainians from Eastern Europe in a war with Russia, but not talk about Albert Douglas, a British citizen, under his remit.
Not even lobby for the FCDO to warn people about these very real risks, these risks that have been well established in the English courts of law, in the High Court, that this kind of thing happens, the forced confessions, the wrongful allegations, the convictions without evidence, and then the human rights abuse and torture. That's all been established in the British courts. So why don't the travel warnings reflect that? I mean, that's a real question. And it really spotlights, I think, that the British government simply don't care. They don't even want us to have that information before we make the decision to go to the UAE. It's
because
irresponsible.
The British government are earning too much money from investments. Investments is ruling the day. Petrodollars that's coming into London. Today, I'm watching them sanction Russians. They took those Russians' money. They didn't not know that Russia was a bad guy. They've been the bad guys since the Cold War. It's not new information. And when they continue to take huge amounts of investment from these Gulf Arab states, you know, Saudi Arabia, where they kill you for being gay, or Kuwait, where, I mean, these countries that are funneling huge volumes of cash into this country, our government is turning a blind eye to everything that they preach every day. Mm. And, you know, I'm watching Boris Johnson go to Saudi Arabia and ask for help from the Saudis because of the human rights of the Russians, when the Saudis are actually worse than the Russians.
I mean, you have the Saudis bombing the Yemenis and you have all of these issues and we're only focusing on this Ukraine issue. I mean, it doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't sit well with me that we're wholly focused on that. And that's all we're talking about. It's kind of, you know, COVID and lockdowns and everything, that was 2 years worth of non-stop bombardment of the media and the complete ignorance of British citizens during that time. To get anything done, you know, is hard enough, but then you throw something like this where they're just tunnel visioned on a single issue, it can really push human rights back and affect British citizens.
I'd ask you a question, Radha. How is it that you would imagine that a case of this magnitude would not be on Sky News? Mm. When I speak to people, they say it's not sexy. This, what's happening in Ukraine, this is something interesting. Mm. What has happened? I mean, what has happened in the Emirates, and what's been allowed to happen by our Foreign Commonwealth Office should have never been allowed to happen in the first place. And it's one thing to allow it, but what we're doing is we are supporting it. Our government is actively supporting torture, beatings, oppression of rights. Our government is actively paying Gulf states in so many different methodologies, including in allowing their investments. We are the problem. This is the problem. The UK is the problem. And our Foreign Commonwealth Office, you know, they should be working overtime for extreme cases like this to be resolved. And maybe Sheikh Mohammed will look at my father's case and give him clemency, or maybe he'll be emboldened by a moment to sweep this under the rug. And someone like my father, who's a single voice, be drowned by the media that you hear about Ukraine. It's drowned out, and he will inevitably die. And that will be on their hands. And I will hold them personally responsible. I especially some of the officers here in the UK who have gone out of their way.
I think as well, it's even more important. I mean, more important for Britain. They're going to see the UAE and Saudi as potential oil vendors, essentially, and they're going to be lobbying that. And that's going to put them even more into the pockets
from Russia. I wonder if they'll do a deal with the Emirates, say, we'll buy your oil as long as you don't take investments from Russia. I mean, I used to live on the Palm Jumeirah, and probably about a third of the population were Russian. You know, I'm sure you won't hear that.
I think that the UAE, I think Sheikh Mohammed as well, has made it fairly clear that he's not really interested in being bullied by anyone, whether it's from the East or whether it's from the West, that they're going to make their own decisions. And they're going to take those decisions slowly as well. They're not going to react like we have, you know, emotionally without considering the ramifications for that region. So it'll be interesting to see. But I mean, so tell me, when was it, just finally, I mean, we'll jump off soon because this has been a long one, but when was the last time you spoke to Albert?
I've been speaking to him every day. We've been getting phone calls to him every day. Thank God.
That's great.
We've been able to get him access to the telephone. Yeah. He's now been put on several new medications. Mm-hmm. And he is awaiting his next operations. His hands obviously are still just obliterated. He's got four broken hands still, four broken bones in his hands, his back and his neck and his head, and it's all left as a mess. But we're all pinned our hopes on the 2nd of April. And
well, I would everyone, rather, you know, the 2nd of April is only a couple of weeks away now. I'd rather, you know, he got a
part. I can't see why they can't say it now.
Back here. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Don't you know, start surgeries now. I mean, he was very uncomfortable with the surgeries in the hospital last time he went. I'd rather he just has the surgeries back here in the UK.
Rather, last time he went to the hospital, they chained him to the bed and they asked him to make a propaganda video.
Yes.
And they threatened his life.
Yes.
This is the treatment of a dictatorship. I mean, you could watch a movie on this. I mean, I've watched less severe 007 movies. The British consular officers were physically stopped from going to the hospital. The soldiers actually said, you cannot see your citizen. And they chained him to that bed and they asked him to make a video. I mean, this is a dictatorship out of control. This is out of control. And, you know, do I want to see him going to yet another hospital? You are worse than the meat on a slab.
Yeah.
His last interview with a consultant for his head injuries was 90 seconds long. Mm. And they shouted at him in Arabic and told him to leave. It is a mess. It's a human rights mess. So, you know, the 2nd of April, We've got the NHS here in the UK.
Yeah.
We've got a chance of saving his life here. We could give him some sort of life. So that even if he come home today, he's permanently disabled. Mm. They've permanently disabled him. He will never be the same again. He's been beaten in an unrepairable fashion. And they've stripped him of all of his wealth. They've ruined his life. And they've took away his dignity. They've took away everything. There's nothing left to take. We are pleading with that government to say there is nothing left. He's an innocent, quiet, soft-spoken gentleman, upstanding member of the community, a charitable man. He's never been committed for a crime in his whole entire life. He's done nothing wrong. You know, that's what we're pleading for. And if anyone watching this, you know, can find a way to support that or raise awareness for that, you know, we will be eternally thankful. And Radha, what you've done for this cause and what you've done for so many British citizens, I mean, you deserve an award. I mean, it is unspoken, but what you have, the level that you've brought this to could have never been achieved without you. And that is a fact.
Thank you. Fact. Well, let's hope in another couple of weeks we're going to get some good news.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been working on this for a long time now. And
1 year.
Yeah, it would be absolutely amazing to see him reunited with you and you picking up him up from the airport and taking him home.
Well, we'd be taking him to a hospital. That's what a lot of people don't realise. Yeah. He isn't coming home to sit on the beach. He'd be going home to have several major operations back to back. He'd be coming home to losing all of his wealth, to be physically disabled. He'd be coming home to never, ever, ever being the same again. So the best case scenario is that we bring someone broken home. He's not coming home to celebrate. He's not coming home to party or go on the beach. Mm. What the Dubai government have done, even if he'd been guilty, is a sin and a crime. Mm. The way they've trapped prisoners is actually the word evil. We talk about Putin being evil. What they do in the United Arab Emirates is a crime against humanity. It's racist. It shouldn't be allowed. And our government certainly shouldn't be supporting it. So we've talked enough, but Radha, thank you for your help. You know, and everyone listening, I hope we've got a chance here. 2nd of April was a big day.
Let's hope our next podcast is a lot more positive. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You are getting a man who is going to be suffering severe, you know, mental issues after having been detained for that long, having gone through everything that he's gone through. No, you're not getting back the same man at all. And you're absolutely right that he will never be the same. But, I mean, thanks for coming on here and discussing this with me. And it was good to see you again and chat again soon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Gulf Injustice podcast today. The case of Albert is extremely disturbing, and we're very keen for the UAE to resolve his situation, especially given the fact that he has been subject to human rights violations and torture, which has now been officially validated by the UAE authorities. To hold him any longer is cruel. It's a serious violation, I think, of the diplomatic relation between the UK and the UAE, and potentially something that should be raised at the United Nations. It's an ongoing issue in the UAE, and we hope that in really bringing this case to the attention of authorities there, that some steps are going to be taken to ensure this kind of treatment never happens again. Thanks, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Gulf Injustice podcast.